has donated today and throughout this fund drive. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another background briefing. Bye for now.
This is April Grace, and you and I are listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also streaming online at kpfk.org.
KFCF Fresno online, kpfa.org.
Good evening. It's Wednesday, February 11th. Democrats grill Attorney General Pam Bondi at a congressional hearing today over her handling of files about the late wealthy pedophile Jeffrey Epstein and his ties to wealthy elite men.
What a massive
cover-up. No, I'm answering a question.
Chairman, will you restore her time? The witness is interrupting.
I'm not going to get in the gutter with this woman.
Stop the
She's
time.
She's doing theatrics.
Let me have my
Gentlelady.
The House passes new strict voter ID laws today that critics say will make it harder for millions of Americans to vote. A grand jury refuses to indict Democratic lawmakers over a video they made calling on military service members to refuse to comply with illegal orders during the president's deployment of the National Guard to city streets last year.
Federal prosecutors went to seek criminal charges against members of the United States Senate for something we said. They tried to have us charged and thrown into jail.
Governor Gavin Newsom signs a bill to prop up Planned Parenthood in the state in the face of Medicare funding cuts from the president's budget and tax cuts bill last year that targeted the abortion provider.
President Trump and congressional Republicans have specifically and intentionally targeted Planned Parenthood. This is part of a calculated attack on reproductive freedom. It is part of a calculated attack on abortion rights, and it will have devastating consequences for communities across California. So today we are doing something simple and powerful. We are keeping the doors open.
And teachers in San Francisco mark day three of a strike over health care and wages as negotiations continue. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Christina Onnestad. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi gave some fiery testimony today in her first appearance before the House Judiciary Committee. The bulk of the fireworks came as Democrats questioned her about the handling of the Epstein files. Bondi fired back with insults, calling them losers, failed lawyers, and saying she would not get in the gutter with them. Christopher Martinez has more.
Attorney General Pam Bondi fielded questions from lawmakers for more than 5 hours in the House Judiciary Committee, but one issue kept coming up over and over, the Epstein files. In her opening statement, Bondi told victims of Jeffrey Epstein's abuse that she was deeply sorry for what they went through, and she told victims, "The FBI is waiting to hear from you." But Democrat Pramila Jayapal of Washington asked victims in the hearing room to raise their hands if they had information but had been unable to meet with the Department of Justice. Jayapal said they all raised their hands.
Will you turn to them now and apologize for what your Department of Justice has put them through with the absolutely unacceptable release of the Epstein files and their information?
Bondi did not apologize for that, instead dismissing the criticism.
I'm not going to get in the gutter for her theatrics.
In another exchange, Democrat Jerry Nadler of New York asked how many of Epstein's co-conspirators Bondi has indicted or even investigated. That led to some shouting.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question.
No, you're going to answer the question the way I asked it.
Chairman Jordan, I'm not going to get in the gutter with these people. All right.
My time. The answer to my question, how many of Epstein's co-conspirators has she indicted, is zero.
Bondi also tangled with a top Democrat on the committee, Jamie Raskin, who grew frustrated with what he saw as Bondi's refusal to answer questions.
You can let her filibuster all day long, but not on our watch. Not on our time. No way. And I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me.
Yeah, oh, I did tell you because we saw what you did in the Senate.
Lawyer, not even a lawyer.
Committee will be in order.
Bondi pointed the finger at her predecessor as Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who she said never faced questions about Epstein.
How ironic is that? You know why? Because Donald Trump, the Dow right now is over. The Dow is over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. You're a great stock trader, as I hear, Raskin.
In a rare show of bipartisanship, Republican Thomas Massie of Kentucky also criticized Bondi for releasing the personal information of victims, telling her, literally, the worst thing you could do to survivors, you did. He got pretty much the same kind of response as did Democrats.
This guy has Trump derangement syndrome. He needs to get... You're a failed politician.
While the Epstein files sucked up most of the oxygen in the room, other topics did come up. At one point, Democrat Joe Neguse asked her about her hiring of a man charged in the January 6th Capitol insurrection.
This is who you choose as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States of America to hire at the Department of Justice. Someone on video yelling, kill him, at police officers? Right?
I believe he was pardoned by President Trump.
Oh, he was pardoned. You're right. Pardoned by President Trump for his offense. Pardoned for yelling, kill him, at police officers. And yet you expect hardworking police officers across the country to believe that you take law enforcement seriously.
After 5 hours of sound and fury, it's not really clear what it all signifies. But perhaps Attorney General Bondi summed it up best.
You sit here and you attack the president, and I am not going to have it. I'm not going to put up with it.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Victims of the late pedophile and family of victims rallied ahead of Bondi's appearance before Congress today. They blasted the Department of Justice and the FBI for redacting potential perpetrators and possible conspirators of identities. Here's Sky Roberts, the brother of the late victim Virginia Giuffre, and Giuffre's sister-in-law, Amanda Roberts.
The way this administration and you specifically have handled survivors has been nothing short of a failure.
We ask you to remember the lives that we have lost during this process. Accountability means real answers, not evasion. It means transparency, not more hiding.
Congressman Ro Khanna has released the identities of six men redacted in the Epstein files. He and Republican Thomas Massie of Kentucky found those names after reviewing what was supposed to be unredacted files available to Congress members this week. The six men had relations with the late convicted pedophile. They include high-profile politicians as well as businessmen, including former CEO of Victoria's Secret, billionaire Leslie Wexner.
These men are Salvatore Navora, Zorab Michalads, Leopig Leonor, Nicola Caputa, Sultan Ahmed bin Suleim, CEO of Dubai Ports World, and billionaire businessman Leslie Wexner, who was labeled as a co-conspirator by the FBI. Now, my question is, why did it take Thomas Massie and me going to the Justice Department to get these six men's identities to become public? And if we found six men that they were hiding in 2 hours, imagine how many men they are covering up for in those 3 million files.
Khanna says when they spoke to the Department of Justice, it acknowledged the mistake and revealed the identities. He says the majority of the files remain redacted, even to lawmakers, but he didn't fault the Department of Justice attorneys.
They were just told upload things that Donald Trump's FBI had already scrubbed. It's a blatant violation of the Epstein Transparency Act, but it also asks a fundamental question. Who are they protecting? Why are they protecting these rich and powerful men, people I call part of the Epstein class? Why are we in a country where there is no elite accountability for people who do the most heinous things?
Being mentioned in the Epstein files does not indicate guilt. Epstein hobnobbed with many powerful elite. But Khanna notes, outside the U.S., the fallout has been swift.
In England, the king now calling for an investigation and possible prosecution of his own brother. You have in Norway, the princess who no longer has support to be the queen. And yet in the United States of America, we have someone in the cabinet, Howard Lutnick, who is all over these Epstein files, who allegedly had business with Epstein after he was convicted of pedophilia, and he still is in the cabinet.
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick also exchanged emails with Epstein, in which one suggests Epstein wanted to meet Lutnick's nanny. Forbes is reporting one of Epstein's lawyers sent the financier a resume for Lutnick's nanny. Tuesday, speaking before Congress, Lutnick said he did not know what the email was about. The New York Times and CBS have both reported Lutnick also had business ties with Epstein. Their signatures are on a stock purchase for a company in 2012 that's since gone defunct. Details have emerged about the six men in the Epstein files, including about Wexner, the FBI's alleged co-conspirator. The UK's Guardian reports his retail empire includes Victoria's Secret, Abercrombie & Fitch, and Bath & Body Works. The New York Times expose in November credits him with turning Epstein from a millionaire to a plutocrat. A legal representative for Wexner told the UK's Guardian that the assistant U.S. attorney had told Wexner's legal counsel in 2019 that he was being viewed as a source of information about Epstein and was not a target in any respect, and that Wexner cooperated by providing background information on Epstein and was never contacted again. Details about Sultan Ahmed bin Sulaiman have also come out. He leads DP World, a multinational ports and logistics business with operations spanning more than 80 countries. He's also the brother of Mohammed bin Sulaiman, the head of the FIA, which governs the world's motorsports championships. Kentucky Republican Thomas Massey wrote on social media, with the names redacted, Sulaiman was, quote, the sender of a torture video. Massey wrote, quote, our law requires victims' information to be redacted, not information of men who sent Epstein torture porn, exclamation mark, unquote. One commenter to Massey's post wrote that Sulaiman controls 10% of global container traffic and could smuggle anyone or anything anywhere he wants in the world. Another commenter asked to identify the sender of an email that alludes to a possible killing. Nicola Caputo is also one of the names announced. It's the same name as an Italian politician, a member of Europe's parliament for the Democratic Party from 2014 to 2019. Salvatore Nuore, no media outlets have identified his name, but a social media account who Khanna follows gave details on Khanna's thread about Nuore, same name as a New York police detective who was once investigated for activities around an escort service. There's no information published yet as to who Zurab Mikhailidze and Leonik Lenov are. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and members of the Congressional Black Caucus spoke out with reporters today about their views on the Trump administration's policies and their impact on black Americans. Jeffries says President Trump first appealed to black voters when he first ran for office and asked them what the hell they have to lose. Jeffries answered,
the answer is everything under his administration. We know that under the Trump administration, civil rights is under attack, voting rights is under attack, reproductive rights under attack, racial justice under attack, social justice under attack.
Jeffries and other members of the caucus also said Black Americans, like most Americans, are facing affordability challenges and a chaotic economic outlook brought on by the president's tariff policies, as well as lack of investments in schools, health cares, and other necessities under Trump. The comments come just days after Trump, or a purported Trump staffer, posted a racist meme about the first Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. A grand jury in Washington has refused to indict Democratic lawmakers for the video they made urging U.S. military members to resist illegal orders. The Justice Department opened an investigation into the video featuring Democratic Senators Mark Kelly of Arizona and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan and four other lawmakers urging U.S. service members to follow established military protocols and reject orders they believed to be unlawful. All the lawmakers previously served in the military or at intelligence agencies. Today, House Speaker Mike Johnson defended the Trump administration's investigation into them.
A line is crossed, and it's very serious when you have leaders here in the Senate and the House effectively telling members of the military to defy orders. It's a very dangerous gambit that they were playing. Should they be sent to jail? Probably not. But we need to call it out as being wildly inappropriate.
But the rare rejection by the grand jury marks another setback for the Trump administration's Justice Department, which has been carrying out efforts to punish perceived political opponents of the president. Christopher Martinez has more.
President Donald Trump called the Democratic lawmakers, all veterans, seditious for releasing a video urging soldiers to refuse illegal orders, even saying on social media that it was punishable by death. But a grand jury refused to hand down any indictments. Michigan Senator Alyssa Slotkin, a former CIA analyst, called it a victory for the Constitution, free speech, and the rule of law. But she says it was a sad day for our country.
I think that we've come to a really sad moment in America where the paradigm of leadership has come in completely reversed. In 2026, instead of looking to our elected leaders like the president as setting an example, it is now up to individual citizens in their private capacity to uphold the values of democracy, free speech, liberty, justice.
Slotkin was speaking at a news conference together with Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, another of the Democrats involved in the video. Kelly says this is about Trump and his cronies trying to break the system in order to silence anyone who speaks out. He says this is straight from the authoritarian playbook, and it's being authorized by an attorney general, Pam Bondi, who he says is serving as the president's personal attack dog.
Folks, this is the master alarm flashing for our democracy. It is threatening the very foundation of our system, that we have a right to free speech, to lawfully speak out and protest our government without fear of retaliation.
Senator Slotkin agrees about the authoritarian playbook. She says Trump has created a climate of fear in universities and in media, with people self-censoring from fear of physical or legal intimidation. But she says sitting down and being quiet does not actually make you safer.
We just made the clear decision that we're not going to go down like that, because it doesn't get better. It just gets worse. And if fear is contagious, hopefully so is courage. And I think right now, certainly I'm drawing inspiration from, you know, people like the grand jury, people like folks peacefully protesting in Minneapolis. Like, I think the common citizen right now is showing the country and the world how to stand up for the values you believe in.
She says she's happy to defend basic freedoms. So too is Senator Kelly.
Senator Slotkin and I, we did not ask for this. We're just the first through the breach. But you'll be damn sure that we are not going to back down. We've been in war zones for this country. We fought our country's enemies. This doesn't intimidate us.
He added some advice for the rest of us.
The most patriotic thing that any American can do right now is to continue exercising our rights, continue speaking truth to power, and not backing down.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
You are listening to the Pacifica Evening News on KPFA 94.1 FM. I'm Christina Onnested. A group of Texas lawmakers are calling for a congressional hearing on the conditions of the nation's largest immigration detention facility in El Paso. Camp East Montana is the center where a Cuban detainee died by homicide strangulation. Detained witnesses reported seeing officers on his neck and body, with the man saying he couldn't breathe. Geraldo Lunos Campos is one of three deaths at the center within 2 months. Officers tried to call his death a suicide. A letter by 35 Texas State Democrats cites reports of torture, killing, and inhumane treatment of detainees, including sexual abuse. The letter notes testimony from one detainee who described officers crushed my testicles between their fingers, which was very painful and humiliating. Texas Representative Democrat Veronica Escobar visited the facility last Friday and posted this video on social media.
The private company running this immigration detention facility is getting worse, not better. And meanwhile, they are continuing to pocket American taxpayer dollars, making their profits while not delivering on what the American taxpayers are supposed to be getting. Why should you care? Because your tax dollars are basically enriching a private corporation. All at the same time that our costs are going up, healthcare is being taken away by the administration, nutrition programs are being cut.
The Washington Post reported last year the detention center garnered 60 violations in the first 50 days it was opened. Though on government-owned military base, it's operated by a private company, Acquisition Logistics, LLC, a Virginia-based business with no known previous experience running a detention facility. It won the $1.2 billion contract with the Trump administration to operate the center. The ACLU is calling for the detention center's closure. Escobar says the administration is planning on more centers in El Paso.
The administration is building yet more facilities like this, enriching more private companies. Here in El Paso, they've just bought three warehouses where they're planning to hold 8,500 human beings. And if the same level of care exists here, they are not going to care about providing people with any dignity whatsoever. And they're going to take your money and give it to a private corporation that is only getting richer off of this.
Camp East Montana is located on the Fort Bliss Army base where the U.S. confined Japanese Americans during the World War II, a move the U.S. government has since apologized for. The letter also notes three deaths in the facility in 2 months. Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz says a federal immigration crackdown in his state could end soon. He spoke with top Trump administration officials, including border czar Tom Homan and White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles. Walz said Tuesday he anticipates hearing more from the administration soon about the operation's future.
My hope is that he speaks this week and that this thing is done next week. Look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's my expert. I've been telling they can't keep kicking this down the road. And I think it's some of it's operationally here. These folks go in rotations of 30 days. I think they're coming up on a 30-day rotation. And when this group rotates out, instead of having a new group rotate in, that's where they'll end it.
He emphasized a trust but verify approach as the situation could change. In California, Los Angeles Assemblyman Mark Gonzalez has co-sponsored a law that bars federal immigration agents from wearing face coverings while on duty, and he's now pushing another bill. In response to scenes emerging from federal immigration enforcement operations, California lawmakers have moved to introduce and pass measures aimed at preventing similar tragedies. Most recently, a bill that would bar former ICE Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents from holding public service jobs in the state. Lauren Schmidt has more.
Assemblymember Mark Gonzalez announced the legislation titled GTFO.
In other words, get the feds
out.
Gonzalez made the announcement in Los Angeles, where he said a growing and dangerous pattern of federal power has been directed at Democratic cities.
ICE publicly executed Renee Good. ICE forcibly took a five-year-old from their family. ICE murdered a peaceful protester in broad daylight. ICE has no shame. ICE does not care. ICE enforces fear, breaks families, and betrays the humanity that it claims to protect.
Gonzalez spoke from the steps of the Japanese American National Museum, where its president, Anne Burroughs, outlined its significance.
It was here in 1942, following the signing of Executive Order 9066, that thousands of Japanese Americans in Los Angeles were ordered to report, stripped of their rights and property, and forcibly removed to America's concentration camps. More than 125,000 people of Japanese ancestry were incarcerated illegally by the U.S. government during World War II. And this museum was founded here on this place in order to remember truth, to commemorate truth and memory, to ensure that what happened here in 19...
A promise she fears is not being kept.
Just 5 months ago, this very plaza, which is hallowed ground for Japanese Americans, was invaded by dozens of armed and masked federal agents. A man was seized and incarcerated right here on a site meant to warn exactly against this kind of state violence.
Los Angeles State Senator Maria Elena Durazo described ICE agents as forcibly abducting people off the streets without notice, without due process, and with little regard for human rights or the law, calling it deeply concerning that a branch of the U.S. government tasked with upholding the law is instead breaking it.
Fascism is growing right before our very eyes. Since January 20th, immigration enforcement has transformed into something unrecognizable, militarized, authoritarian force that operates without warrants, without accountability, without any sense of humanity. Border Patrol agents are counting bullet holes instead of getting people like Alex Pretty medical help. Masked agents are shooting to kill. They're entering homes without warrants. A climate of pure fear is their goal. The whole system is broken.
Durazo said extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures.
And we would never have proposed legislation like this because there were rules. And those rules don't exist anymore under this Trump administration.
If passed, the bill would establish new hiring standards for teachers, judges, social workers, police officers, and other public employees. Those standards would take into account whether an applicant's employment history included work with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The legislation will be jointly introduced with Speaker Robert Rivas and could make its way to the Assembly floor for a vote as early as June 2026. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk this week called on the international community to intervene immediately to stop more mass killings and other flagrant war crimes against civilians in Sudan. Türk told members of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva the international community should extend an arms embargo from Darfur to include all of Sudan. The military has been battling the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF militia, for control of the country for nearly 3 years. Türk said the RSF and allied Arab militias carried out crimes against humanity in Al-Fashir after it overran the capital in North Darfur in October.
The pattern that emerges that thousands of people had been killed when within a very short period of time, end of October, we don't know the exact number, but we are talking about thousands, not just hundreds. We are talking about thousands of people that have been killed. There were summary executions. There were people who were trying to leave Al-Fashir who were killed when they tried to leave.
The humanitarian emergency resulting from the conflict has affected more than 30 million people in Sudan. Many have faced repeated displacement. Others have been impacted by famine and systematic sexual violence, including gang rape. The UN has called it the world's worst humanitarian crisis. And you are listening to the Pacifica Evening News here on KPFA 94.1 FM Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Christina Onnestad.
I love KPFK. It's actually my favorite radio station, and the reason I love them is because they are bold and they are representative.
Hello, this is Stacy Keach asking for your support for KPFK. Call now and pledge on 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Keep the station alive that brings this program to you every week. Please call now, 818-985-5735. And thank you for your help.
California Governor Gavin Newsom signed emergency legislation today for Planned Parenthood. The bill is in direct response to President Donald Trump's tax and spending bill, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, that Newsom calls the Big Ugly Bill. He spoke at a press conference today.
Planned Parenthood is an extraordinary organization. 1.3 million people a year encounter support in a Planned Parenthood clinic, 109 clinics throughout the state of California. And we're not only providing support in the state, but it was stated appropriately by the pro tem, increasing numbers of people coming from out of the state of California, not with a closed fist, but an open hand and an open heart. We were talking about some of those clinics, rural clinics in Northern California near Eureka, people coming in from Idaho and other parts of the country. That's what we do. That's what, again, defines the values of the state of California.
The bill provides upwards of $90 million for Planned Parenthood. It comes days after the Health Reproductive Care Agency dropped its legal challenge against the Trump administration's decision to cut off Medicaid funding for abortion providers. The organization filed suit last July, claiming a provision in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act unfairly targets their clinics. A federal appeals court delivered the nation's largest network of reproductive health clinics a blow, ruling the administration could continue to withhold Medicaid funding. The funding cuts have already forced 23 Planned Parenthood clinics to close across the country since the tax bill took effect last year. At the press conference, Planned Parenthood affiliates of California President Jody Hicks reiterated Trump's cuts specifically target her organization. She says it represents a deliberate attempt to disempower those seeking care at Planned Parenthood, often the most vulnerable individuals and communities in the country.
Planned Parenthood is always going to fight and always going to fight back, but this time we needed an army with us. We really did. There was nothing we could have done with an 80% cut in the Planned Parenthood patient population, that we have a mission to serve those most vulnerable communities, and there's no way to survive without the support of the state of California. And we received it from day one. Everyone jumped in to try and find a solution, and we got here today. And I could not be more grateful.
California provided an initial $145 million last fall to Planned Parenthood. When it was initially proposed in January, the new bill allocated $60 million, a number state Democrats ultimately increased to $90 million. The bill also creates a new grant program that allows for more efficiency. Assemblymember Budget Chair Jesse Gabriel.
Make no mistake about it. We are here today because President Trump and congressional Republicans have specifically and intentionally targeted Planned Parenthood. This is part of a calculated attack on reproductive freedom. It is part of a calculated attack on abortion rights, and it will have devastating consequences for communities across California. So today we are doing something simple and powerful. We are keeping the doors open because the door to each Planned Parenthood clinic is a gateway to a better, healthier, and safer life for tens of thousands of Californians.
In 2023, Planned Parenthood received more than $800,000 from Medicaid that it no longer. California doctor of violating Texas's anti-abortion laws. The complaint was filed by a man who impregnated a woman. She then ordered abortion medication from a Bay Area doctor, Remy Cueto. He's the same doctor Louisiana's prosecuting and tried to extradite for sending abortion medication to another patient in that state. Governor Newsom blocked the extradition under a new state shield law that protects abortion providers from out-of-state prosecutions. The Texas lawsuit was filed under a new Texas law that allows private citizens to sue abortion pill providers for mailing the medication. The complaint accuses Dr. Cueto of wrongful death and seeks $100,000 in damages. It may be the first lawsuit of its kind since the law took effect, according to the Center for Reproductive Rights, a legal group defending the doctor. Nancy Northrup, the center's president and CEO, said in a statement, Texas officials have already been going after doctors outside their borders, and now they've incentivized private citizens to do their bidding. Confusion and conflict in Texas today over a sudden and surprising airspace closure over El Paso that stems from the Pentagon's stated plans to test a laser to shoot down drones supposedly used by Mexican drug cartels, according to multiple media reports, that caused friction with the Federal Aviation Administration concerned with air traffic safety. Despite a meeting scheduled later this month to discuss the plan, the Pentagon wanted to move forward and test it, prompting the FAA to shutter the airspace today and delay flights. It was not clear whether the laser was ultimately deployed. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said earlier the response by the Department of Defense and the FAA to neutralize an incursion by Mexican cartel drones had led to the airspace closure. Drone incursions are not uncommon along the U.S.-Mexico border. San Francisco teachers marked day three of a strike today, the first strike in nearly 50 years, as negotiations between the district and the teachers' union continue. No agreement yet reached. San Francisco Unified School District officials say that means schools will remain closed tomorrow for the fourth day. Here's Superintendent Maria Sue speaking this morning.
Yesterday, we were here joined by Mayor Daniel Lurie and State Superintendent of Instruction Tony Thurman, because they understand the urgency of what's happening and that both parties need to come together to get this done. Our students and parents and families and entire school community and city deserves nothing less.
She said the teachers' union rejected a counterproposal from the district last night. Today, they're going over a counterproposal from the union. Laura Dudnick is a spokesperson for the school district and gave an update on bargaining late this afternoon.
We are making progress. This is very complicated work, and the items that are being discussed today are health care, salaries, and special education. These are very complex pieces of work that have to happen. There's lots of budgets involved and spreadsheets, and so this is work that's happening at the table right now.
The district is dealing with a funding shortfall, an estimated $100 million deficit, but the teachers' union say the money is there. Teachers are demanding higher wages and better health insurance compensation. Ryan Elias is an English teacher. He spoke in a video the union posted on social media today, and Aaron Hart is a teacher on strike who spoke to the Associated Press.
There are educators in this district that have to pay 40% of their paycheck for health care coverage. And for us, that's absolutely untenable.
We can't make a living. We can't pay for our rent. We can't be stable for our students, right? You guys as children out here. We just want to be as consistent and be able to help them as much as possible. But we're understaffed right now, underpaid, and we're taking a 2% cut rate.
Earlier in the day, students who are on day three without classes say they would march to the War Memorial Veterans Building to demand a meeting with Superintendent Sue and call on her to meet striking educators' demands. Union members also formed a human banner at Ocean Beach in protest today. Hundreds of teachers and supporters stood on the sand, used their bodies to form the word strike. And for our students, it could be seen high from above. After 11 months of bargaining, teachers went on strike Monday, closing classes for some 50,000 students. Early estimates of the loss from closed classes, somewhere between $7 and $10 million a day to the district, according to Dudnick. Yesterday, estimates varied of about 1,000 or more people rallying in support of teachers' demands at Dolores Park. The teachers' union also says other issues remain, including staffing and special education programs. The two parties reached agreement on sanctuary protections for immigrant students. Meanwhile, San Francisco Department of Parks and Rec says it's opening facilities citywide for a full daycare and meal access for students during the school strike. Tomorrow, teachers, union, and supporters are planning a march and rally at noon at Justin Herman Plaza. Canada is in mourning after a school shooting left at least 9 people dead and more than 25 injured in the attack in a small mountain community of Tumbler Ridge, including 2 people with life-threatening injuries who were airlifted for medical care, according to police. Here's Canada's Prime Minister, Mark Carney.
Mr. Speaker, in the days ahead, there'll be important questions to ask, difficult conversations to have. We owe that to the victims and their families. But now, it's time for grieving and remembrance.
Police today identified the suspect in the shooting as 18-year-old who had prior mental health calls to her home and who was found dead following the attack. Royal Canadian Mounted Police Deputy Commissioner Dwayne McDonald says Jesse Van Rootsteller had a history of mental health contact with officers, and the suspect's mother and stepbrother were also found dead in a home near the school.
The deceased victims from the school include an adult female educator, 3 female students, and 2 male students between the ages of 13 and 17. Two additional victims, an adult female and a male youth, were located deceased at a local residence. Multiple victims were located throughout the school, along with approximately 25 individuals with possible injuries.
The motive remains unclear. The House has voted to slap back President Donald Trump's tariffs on Canada. The tally offered a rare rebuke of the White House agenda today, though it wouldn't actually undo the tariffs without support from the president. That's unlikely. Almost instantly, President Trump issued his own rebuke with a political warning to those who would dare cross him. He wrote on social media, quote, "Any Republican in the House or the Senate that votes against tariffs will seriously suffer the consequences come election time, and that includes primaries," exclamation mark, unquote. The tally today was 219 to 211. It was among the first times the Republican-controlled House has confronted the president over a signature policy. Trump himself. The resolution seeks to end the national emergency that Trump declared to impose the tariffs, though actually undoing the policy would require Trump's support, which is unlikely. It heads next to the Senate. The Trump administration has stopped flying a rainbow flag at the Stonewall National Monument in New York. That's angered activists who see the change as an attack against the country's first national monument to LGBTQ plus history. The National Park Service says it's simply complying with recent guidance that restricts the agency to flying flags only of the United States, the Department of the Interior, and POW/MIA flags. Brad Hoylman Siegel is Manhattan Borough's president. He says it's not just about flying a flag.
A wholesale attempt to erase the LGBTQ community's history. History which began here at the Stonewall Inn back in 1969, where some very brave transgender activists threw the first brick and launched the contemporary LGBTQ human rights movement. It's deeply troubling because I'm a gay dad with two kids, and what are they supposed to think? That the President of the United States doesn't want their family represented in a national landmark?
The rainbow flag is a well-known emblem of LGBTQ plus rights. Some city and state officials are vowing to raise the flag again. A group of Democrats today introduced the Trans Bill of Rights on Capitol Hill. Washington Democrat Pramila Jayapal has a trans child.
This bill supports amending the Civil Rights Act to ensure that trans people have the same rights and protections as all other Americans. It creates a level playing field where trans people no longer have to fight tooth and nail to get the same treatment as their cisgender friends. Creating inherent protections for trans people when it comes to schooling, housing, accessing credit and health care, expanding community services and mental health services for trans people is what it takes to ensure that trans people have full equality.
It would amend the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include gender identity and amend the Title IX to clarify it protects students from discrimination based on gender identity and sex characteristics. Alano is a college student from Las Vegas. He says the Trump administration's rules barring trans visibility have created a second-class system in the U.S.
We are no longer able to update the gender marker on our documents to reflect who we actually are. On the surface, this might seem trivial. It can easily go sideways if the details on your ID don't line up with who you actually are. Essentially, to access the basic right to work, I was forced to disclose deeply personal information that put me at risk.
He says showing someone a passport stating he is a female when he appears male puts him at risk of being discriminated against and adds anxiety to his pursuit of employment and other instances he must use that form of identification. The bodies of four decapitated women from Haiti that were discovered last week on the border of the Dominican Republic were recent deportees from Puerto Rico, apparent casualties from the Trump administration's mass deportation agenda. Dominican authorities say they detained one man who denied involvement and later turned him over to Haitian National Police. It's not clear if the man was charged. President Trump has targeted Haitians when running for president. He and Vice President J.D. Vance made the bogus claim Haitian immigrants are eating people's pets in Springfield, Ohio, which has a large Haitian immigrant community, leading to death threats in the town. The city was bracing for a surge of immigration agents last week when TPS, temporary protected status for Haitians, was scheduled to expire due to an executive order revoking TPS for Haitians signed by the president last year. But a federal judge temporarily blocked the administration from ending TPS for Haitians, and a filing Tuesday by the Department of Homeland Security in the ongoing legal challenge to the executive order. The DHS says there is no anticipated surge of federal immigration agents to Springfield, though the department was ready to enforce the law after TPS was to expire last week. TPS holders are able to live and work in the U.S. legally based on a procedure created in 1990 to aid immigrants from mostly war-torn countries. Losing that status would put many of the 12,000 estimated Haitians in the U.S. vulnerable to deportation, some of whom have lived in the country for decades. Diana Cabcaven has more.
Arlene Joseph is a leading human rights advocate. She's the founder and executive director of the Haitian Bridge Alliance and co-founder of the Black Immigrants Bail Fund. Josef says that if Haiti as a country doesn't warrant temporary protective status, or TPS, then which countries do?
What is at stake is that we have over almost 500,000 Haitians living in the United States at risk of losing everything. That includes family separation, deportation, where we have children, U.S.-born children, at risk of losing their parents if TPS is not redesignated and extended for Haiti. In order to cover 500,000 people, we need a redesignation and extension of TPS for Haiti.
Both Presidents Biden and Trump have deported tens of thousands of Haitian refugees, even though they face the horrendous living conditions, political and economic collapse, poverty, and danger from gang violence. In 2021, Haiti had a 7.2 magnitude earthquake, destruction from Tropical Storm Grace, and the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. A coalition of 300 human rights groups denounced the Biden administration's deportations to Haiti, urging it to expand TPS status. Under Trump's second term, Homeland Security Secretary Noem said that Haiti no longer meets the statutory requirements for TPS and said the decision was based on a review conducted by U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Immigrant rights advocates say that Noem did not follow the legal procedures to make her conclusion. According to Gerlene Josef, Haitian TPS holders invest and contribute to the economy. She said they are nurses, healthcare workers, meat industry workers, and agricultural workers.
Currently, we have 1.4 million people who are internally displaced in Haiti. The impact of terminating TPS for Haiti, we have to understand that those people are the ones supporting over 4 million people back home in Haiti. We, as Haitian Americans, specifically TPS holders, are investing over $5.9 billion in the United States.
Judge Reyes says Homeland Security Secretary Noem ignored the law because of her ideology, not factual evidence. Immigrant rights advocates now fear that DHS will try to bully the courts by accessing the Supreme Court's emergency docket procedure, as it did in 2025. In Berkeley for Pacifica, KPFA, this is Diana Kepkep.
President Donald Trump met privately with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today and said he pushed Israel to back continued U.S. talks with Iran on a nuclear deal. Netanyahu has been a frequent visitor to the White House during Trump's second term and spent nearly 3 hours in this visit, his seventh so far. Trump said their meeting ended with no decision, but that he'd insisted negotiations keep moving forward. Netanyahu said they also discussed Gaza and regional issues. His office says he wants any deal to limit Iran's missiles and its support for groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. The U.S. and Iran held indirect talks in Jordan last week. Iran says mistrust remains high, but it still wants uranium enrichment. Activists say the death toll from a crackdown over Iran's nationwide protests has reached at least 7,002, with many more people still feared dead. The U.S.-based human rights activist news agency offered the latest figures today. It's been accurate in counting deaths during previous rounds of unrest in Iran and relies on a network of activists in the country to verify the death toll. Iran's government offered its only death toll on January 21st last month, saying 3,117 people were killed. Iran's theocracy in the past has undercounted or not reported fatalities from past unrest. Meanwhile, Iran is marking the 47th anniversary of its 1979 Islamic Revolution amid internal and external pressures. State TV showed pro-government rallies with chants against the United States and Israel today. President Masoud Pezeshkian said at a ceremony, Iran is open to nuclear negotiations. Also on today, a senior Iranian official visited Qatar, a key mediator, where the U.S. has a military base. Meanwhile, President Trump is considering sending another aircraft carrier to the Middle East. The region remains tense with fears of potential conflict if negotiations fail, as Trump has ratcheted up rhetoric against the country. The president's midterm redistricting master plan is falling short, according to a report by the Wall Street Journal. The president's plan to create more GOP-leaning House districts through mid-decade redistricting is on track to yield far fewer gains than expected, in part because of the Supreme Court's decision from February 4th, earlier this month, that allows California to hold its House elections this fall with a map that could flip as many as 5 seats from the GOP to the Democrats. Those expected Democratic gains would significantly trim the number of seats Republicans could pick up from newly redrawn maps in Texas, North Carolina, Missouri, and Ohio. Nonpartisan analysts say California's ruling by the Supreme Court will likely limit GOP gains from the redistricting push to 3 or 4 seats, or even none at all. Other blue states are pursuing redistricting as well, including Illinois. Virginia is also pursuing redistricting. And e-waste imports. The government says the country will not be a dumping ground for the world's waste. The Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission said e-waste is now under absolute prohibition category. Malaysia struggled with illegal e-waste imports, which are hazardous to health and the environment. Late last year, the government said it seized more than 70 containers of hazardous e-waste, primarily from the United States. Last month, 4 of the containers carrying used computers, hard drives, audio-video devices, modems, power boards, and printed circuit boards were shipped back to the United States. According to the United Nations e-waste monitor, the world is on track to create a record 82 million tons of e-waste by the year 2030. 62 million tons was created in 2022, enough to fill 1.5 million 40-ton trucks, enough trucks to form a bumper-to-bumper line encircling the equator. The majority of that generated by China and the U.S. U.S. employers added 130,000 jobs last month, but government revisions cut 2024 to 2025 U.S. payroll by hundreds of thousands. The Labor Department said today the unemployment rate fell 4.3%. The report includes major revisions that reduce the number of jobs created last year to just 181,000. That's the weakest since the pandemic year of 2020, and less than half the Trump administration's previously reported 584,000 new jobs. The job market's been sluggish for months, even though the economy is registering solid growth. Employment figures do not reflect people whose unemployment benefits have expired and cannot find work, or those only working part-time while still looking for full-time work. The Congressional Budget Office today warned yet again the U.S. is on an unsustainable fiscal path. The CBO raised its estimate of deficits for the coming decade by $1.4 trillion, thanks in part to President Trump's 2025 tax law. CBO Director Philip Swagel.
The deficit for fiscal year 2026 is projected to be $1.9 trillion, which equals 5.8% of gross domestic product, GDP. That's about the same in relation to the size of the economy as the 2025 deficit.
The CBO said the amount of debt held by the public is expected to become much larger than the annual outpost of the economy, reaching 120% of gross domestic product in 2036. That would surpass levels reached in the aftermath of World War II and put the world's most important economy at risk of a destabilizing debt crisis. For the forecast for the San Francisco Bay Area today, mostly cloudy, of chance of rain, highs in the upper 40s. Tomorrow, clearing with sun, highs in the low 60s. In Fresno in the central San Joaquin Valley, tonight, 20% chance of rain before 10, then partial clouds, clearing with sun tomorrow.
I came from Houston, Texas, moved out to L.A. for work and school. I found out about KPFK by turning on local radio, and it's nice to listen to the sister station out here.
We're in this together. Do your part. Help keep KPFK alive. 818-985-5735.
Support comes from Ahead Behind Music, presenting acoustic guitar wizard Jack West on Sunday, February 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at Catalina's. Jack West debuts his percussive guitar duo with fellow acoustic guitar virtuoso